Chapter 11. He has been bitten by the tarantula. All in the wrong. Many years ago, I contracted an intimacy with a Mr. William Legrand. He was of an ancient Huguenot family, and had once been wealthy, but a series of misfortunes had reduced him to want. To avoid the mortification consequent upon his disasters, he left New Orleans, the city of his forefathers, and took up his residence at Sullivan's Island, near Charleston, South Carolina. This island is a very singular one. It consists of little else than the sea sand, and is about 3 miles long. Its breadth at no point exceeds a quarter of a mile. It is separated from the mainland by a scarcely perceptible creek, oozing its way through a wilderness of reeds and slime, a favorite resort of the marsh hen. The vegetation, as might be supposed, is scant, or at least dwarfish. No trees of any magnitude are to be seen. Near the western extremity, where Fort Moultrie stands, and where are some miserable frame buildings, tenanted, during summer, by the fugitives from Charleston dust and fever, may be found, indeed, the bristly palmetto. But the whole island, with the exception of this western point, and a line of hard, white beach on the sea coast, is covered with a dense undergrowth of the sweet myrtle, so much prized by the horticulturists of England. The shrub here often attains the height of 15 or 20 feet, and forms an almost impenetrable coppice, burthening the air with its fragrance. In the inmost recesses of this coppice, not far from the eastern or more remote end of the island, Legrand had built himself a small hut, which he occupied when I first, by mere accident, made his acquaintance. This soon ripened into friendship, for there was much in the recluse to excite interest and esteem. I found him well educated, with unusual powers of mind, but infected with misanthropy, and subject to perverse moods of alternate enthusiasm and melancholy. He had with him many books, but rarely employed them. His chief amusements were gunning and fishing, or sauntering along the beach, and through the myrtles, in quest of shells or entomological specimens. His collection of the latter might have been envied by a swammerdom. In these excursions he was usually accompanied by an old negro, called Jupiter, who had been manumitted before the reverses of the family, but who could be induced, neither by threats nor by promises, to abandon what he considered his right of attendance upon the footsteps of his young Asawill. It is not improbable that the relatives of Legrand, conceiving him to be somewhat unsettled in intellect, had contrived to instill this obstinacy into Jupiter, with a view to the supervision and guardianship of the wanderer. The winters in the latitude of Sullivan's Island are seldom very severe, and in the fall of the year it is a rare event indeed, when a fire is considered necessary. About the middle of October, 18, there occurred, however, a day of remarkable chilliness. Just before sunset I scrambled my way through the evergreens to the hut of my friend, whom I had not visited for several weeks, my residence being, at that time, in Charleston, a distance of 9 miles from the island, while the facilities of passage and repassage were very far behind those of the present day. Upon reaching the hut I rapped, as was my custom, and getting no reply, sought for the key, where I knew it was secreted, unlocked the door and went in. A fine fire was blazing upon the hearth. It was a novelty, and by no means an ungrateful one. I threw off an overcoat, took an armchair by the crackling logs, and awaited patiently the arrival of my hosts. Soon after dark they arrived, and gave me a most cordial welcome. Jupiter, grinning from ear to ear, bustled about to prepare some marsh hens for supper. Legrand was in one of his fits, how else shall I term them, of enthusiasm. He had found an unknown bivalve, forming a new genus, and, more than this, he had hunted down and secured, with Jupiter's assistance, a scarabus which he believed to be totally new, but in respect to which he wished to have my opinion on the morrow. "And why not tonight?" I asked, rubbing my hands over the blaze, and wishing the whole tribe of scarabi at the devil. "H, if I had only known you were here. said Legrand, but it's so long since I saw you, and how could I foresee that you would pay me a visit this very night of all others? As I was coming home, I met Lieutenant G from the fort, and, very foolishly, I lent him the bug. So it will be impossible for you to see it until the morning. Stay here tonight, and I will send Jup down for it at sunrise. It is the loveliest thing in creation. At sunrise? Nonsense, no. The bug. It is of a brilliant gold color about the size of a large hickory nut with two jet black spots near one extremity of the back, and another, somewhat longer, at the other. The antennar, a ain't no tin in him, massa will, I keep a tellin' on you, here interrupted Jupiter. The bug is a ghoul bug, solid, ebery bit of him, inside and all, sep him wing neber feel half so heavy a bug in my life. L, suppose it is, Jup, replied Legrand, somewhat more earnestly, it seemed to me, than the case demanded, is that any reason for your letting the birds burn? The color here he turned to me is really almost enough to warrant Jupiter's idea. You never saw a more brilliant metallic luster than the scales emit, but of this, you cannot judge till tomorrow. In the meantime I can give you some idea of the shape. Saying this, he seated himself at a small table, on which were a pen and ink, but no paper. He looked for some in a drawer, but found none. Ever mind, said he at length, this will answer. And he drew from his waistcoat pocket a scrap of what I took to be very dirty fool's cap, and made upon it a rough drawing with the pen. While he did this, I retained my seat by the fire, for I was still chilly. When the design was complete, he handed it to me without rising. As I received it, a loud growl was heard, succeeded by a scratching at the door. Jupiter opened it, and a large Newfoundland, belonging to Legrand, rushed in, leaped upon my shoulders, and loaded me with caresses, for I had shown him much attention during previous visits. When his gambols were over, I looked at the paper, and, to speak the truth, found myself not a little puzzled at what my friend had depicted. L, I said, after contemplating it for some minutes, this is a strange scarabus, I must confess. New to me. Never saw anything like it before, unless it was a skull, or a death's head which it more nearly resembles than anything else, that has come under my observation. Death's head, echoed Legrand, yes well, it has something of that appearance upon paper, no doubt. The two upper black spots look like eyes, eh? And the longer one at the bottom like a mouth, and then the shape of the whole is oval. Perhaps so, said I. But, Legrand, I fear you are no artist. I must wait until I see the beetle itself, if I am to form any idea of its personal appearance. L, I don't know, said he, a little nettled, I draw tolerably should do it at least, have had good masters, and flatter myself that I am not quite a blockhead. But, my dear fellow, you are joking then, said I, this is a very passable skull indeed, I may say, that it is a very excellent skull, according to the vulgar notions about such specimens of physiology, and your scarabus must be the queerest scarabus in the world, if it resembles it. Why, we may get up a very thrilling bit of superstition upon this hint. I presume you will call the bug Scarabus capitominus, or something of that kind. There are many similar titles in the natural histories. But where are the Anton you spoke of? He Anton, said Legrand, who seemed to be getting unaccountably warm upon the subject. I am sure you must see the Anton. I made them as distinct as they are in the original insect, and I presume that is sufficient. L, well, I said. Perhaps you have still I don't see them, and I handed him the paper without additional remark, not wishing to ruffle his temper, but I was much surprised at the turn affairs had taken. His ill humor puzzled me, and, as for the drawing of the beetle, there were positively no Anton visible, and the whole did bear a very close resemblance to the ordinary cuts of a death's head. He received the paper very peevishly, and was about to crumple it, apparently to throw it in the fire, when a casual glance at the design seemed suddenly to rivet his attention. In an instant his face grew violently red, in another as excessively pale. For some minutes he continued to scrutinize the drawing minutely where he sat. At length he arose, took a candle from the table, and proceeded to seat himself upon a sea chest in the farthest corner of the room. Here again he made an anxious examination of the paper, turning it in all directions. He said nothing, however, and his conduct greatly astonished me. Yet I thought it prudent not to exacerbate the growing moodiness of his temper by any comment. Presently he took from his coat pocket a wallet, placed the paper carefully in it, and deposited both in a writing desk, which he locked. He now grew more composed in his demeanor, but his original air of enthusiasm had quite disappeared. Yet he seemed not so much sulky as abstracted. As the evening wore away, he became more and more absorbed in reverie, from which no sallies of mine could arouse him. It had been my intention to pass the night at the hut, as I had frequently done before, but, seeing my host in this mood, I deemed it proper to take leave. He did not press me to remain, but, as I departed, he shook my hand with even more than his usual cordiality. It was about a month after this, and during the interval I had seen nothing of Legrand, when I received a visit, at Charleston, from his man, Jupiter. I had never seen the good old Negro look so dispirited, and I feared that some serious disaster had befallen my friend. "L. Jup," said I, "what is the matter now? How is your master?" "Hi, to speak the truth, massa, him not so very well as mought be." "Ah, well. I am truly sorry to hear it. What does he complain of?" "R. That's it. Him neber plain of nothing but him very sick for all that." "Very sick, Jupiter, why didn't you say so at once? Is he confined to bed?" "Oh, that he ain't. He ain't fine nor that's just war the shoe pinch my mind has got to be very heavy bout poor Massa Will." "A biter, I should like to understand what it is you are talking about. You say your master is sick. Hasn't he told you what ails him?" "Hi, Massa, tain't worthwhile for to get mad about the matter. Massa Will say nothing at all ain't the matter with him, but then, what make him go about looking this here way, with he head down, and he soldiers up, and as white as a ghost? And then he keep a siffin' all the time, eep say what, Jupiter? Eep say siffin' with the figures on the slate, the queerest figures I ever did see. I's gettin' to be scared, I tell you. Hab for to keep mighty tight eye upon him maneuvers. T'other day he give me slip for the sun up, and was gone the whole ob the blessed day. I had a big stick ready cut for to give him deuced good beating when he did come, but I's sich a fool that I hadn't the heart arter all he looked so very poorly."
"H? What?"
"Ah, yes. Upon the whole I think you had better not be too severe with the poor fellow. Don't flog him, Jupiter, he can't very well stand it, but can you form no idea of what has occasioned this illness, or rather this change of conduct? Has anything unpleasant happened since I saw you?"
"Oh, massa, they ain't been nothing unpleasant since then. 'Twas for then I'm feared 'twas the very day you was there."
"Ow? What do you mean?"
"Hi, massa, I mean the bug there now."
"He what?"
"E bug, I'm very sartin that massa Will been bit somewhere about the head by that cool bug."
"And e what cause have you, Jupiter, for such a supposition?"
"Laws enough, massa, and mouth too. I never did see sick a deuced bug he kick, and he bite every ting what come near him. Massa Will catch him fuss, but that for to let him go gin mighty quick, I tell you then was the time he must ha got the bite. I did an apostrophe T like the look o' the bug mouth, myself, no how, so I would an apostrophe T take hold ob him with my finger, but I catch him with a piece ob paper that I found. I wrap him up in the paper and stuff piece ob it in the mouth. That was the way."
"And do you think, then, that your master was really bitten by the beetle, and that the bite made him sick?"
"Do an apostrophe T think nothing about it, I knows it. What make him dream about the ghoul so much, if tain't cause he bit by the ghoul bug?
I's heard about them ghoul bugs for this.
But how do you know he dreams about gold?" How I know? Why cause he talk about it in his sleep? That's how I knows. L. Jump. Perhaps you are right. But to what fortunate circumstance am I to attribute the honor of a visit from you today? At the matter, Massa? Did you bring any message from Mr. Legrand?
Oh, Massa, I bring this here pistol, and here Jupiter handed me a note which ran thus.
My dear, why have I not seen you for so long a time? I hope you have not been so foolish as to take offense at any little brusquerie of mine. But no, that is improbable. Since I saw you, I have had great cause for anxiety. I have something to tell you, yet scarcely know how to tell it, or whether I should tell it at all. I have not been quite well for some days past, and poor old Jupp annoys me, almost beyond endurance, by his well-meant attentions, would you believe it? He had prepared a huge stick, the other day, with which to chastise me for giving him the slip, and spending the day, soulless, among the hills on the mainland. I verily believe that my ill looks alone saved me a flogging. I have made no addition to my cabinet since we met. If you can, in any way, make it convenient, come over with Jupiter. Do come. I wish to see you tonight, upon business of importance. I assure you that it is of the highest importance. Ever yours, William Legrand. There was something in the tone of this note which gave me great Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.